Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
April 2nd, 2025 will forever be remembered as the day American industry was reborn, the day America's destiny was reclaimed, and the day that we began to make America wealthy again.
Global stock markets are tumbling after President Trump announced sweeping tariffs on about 185 countries and what the European Union has described as a major blow to the world economy. We'll speak with economist Richard Wolff. Then to the campus of Columbia, where Jewish students chain themselves to university gates in support of Mahmoud Khalil, the former Columbia student protest leader now detained in an ICE jail in Louisiana.
And I'm chained to this gate today as a Jewish student and friend of Mahmoud Khalil's, demanding answers on how his name got to DHS and which trustee specifically handed over that information. We believe that there is a high chance that our new president, Claire Shipman, handed over that information, and we as Jewish students demand transparency in that process.
And then to upstate New York, where a mother and three children were detained when Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents raided a farm not far from the home of Trump's border czar, Tom Holman. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has announced plans to seize large sections of the Gaza Strip to create a new so-called security corridor that would cut off Rafah from the neighboring southern city of Khan Yunis. Israel already controls some 17% of Gaza's territory, according to an Israeli human rights group. Israel's re-invasion of Gaza came amidst a wave of deadly missile and artillery attacks that killed at least 56 people since dawn. Among the dead are 19 Palestinians killed in an Israeli airstrike on a United Nations clinic in Jabalia, being used as a bomb shelter. Victims included children and at least one infant.
What are these crimes of the occupation? What are these crimes? Show it to the entire world. Show it to all of humanity in the world, in the east and west of the earth. This is a one-week-old baby girl.
Other Israeli attacks today killed civilians in a displacement camp in Khan Yunis that Israel's designated as a so-called humanitarian zone. Israel's military has killed over 1,000 people in Gaza since unilaterally ending the ceasefire last month. Meanwhile, Israel launched a wave of airstrikes across Syria, including an attack on Daraa that killed at least 9 civilians, according to a local official. Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz said the strikes targeted Syrian military infrastructure, calling them a warning for the future. Syria's foreign ministry called the attacks a, quote, blatant violation of international law and Syrian sovereignty, unquote. In Yemen, leaders of Houthi say 5 people were killed in 2 waves of strikes on Hodeidah province on Wednesday. The Trump administration has launched near-daily attacks on Yemen since mid-March, when the Houthis resumed attacks on ships in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden in solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza. Hungary announced its withdrawing from the International Criminal Court as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu arrived in Budapest today for a 4-day state visit. The ICC issued an arrest warrant for Netanyahu in November over war crimes and crimes against humanity in Gaza. Human Rights Watch said Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orbán's welcoming of Netanyahu despite the ICC warrant is just, quote, Orbán's latest assault on the rule of law, adding to the country's dismal record on rights, unquote. Here in New York, Jewish students chained themselves to Columbia University's gates Wednesday to demand the school reveal the names of trustees and Columbia officials who collaborated with federal immigration authorities in the arrest last month of student protest leader Mahmoud Khalil.
We as Jewish students demand transparency in that process. You know, as Jewish students and to the Jewish people at large, being political pawns in a game is not a new occurrence. And that's something that we very much so are here to say, hey, you cannot weaponize anti-Semitism to harm our friends and peers.
Students continued their action into the early hours this morning, even after Columbia security and NYPD arrived on the scene to cut the chains and forcibly remove protesters. We'll hear more of their voices later in the broadcast. President Trump Wednesday unveiled sweeping global tariffs, including a 10% blanket tariff on all imported goods. In addition, U.S. trading partners, including the European Union, China and Japan, will see even larger country-specific reciprocal tariffs. China now faces a total 54% tariff. Trump invoked emergency power so that he could bypass Congress.
My fellow Americans, this is Liberation Day. I'm waiting for a long time. April 2nd, 2025 will forever be remembered as the day American industry was reborn, the day America's destiny was reclaimed, and the day that we began to make America wealthy again. Gonna make it wealthy, good and wealthy.
Markets plummeted following the news as analysts warned it'll drive inflation, harm industry, could lead to a global trade war. World leaders decried the tariffs. This is European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen.
President Trump's announcement of universal tariffs on the whole world, including the European Union, is a major blow to the world economy. I deeply regret this choice. Let's be clear-eyed about the immense consequences. The global economy will massively suffer. Uncertainty will spiral and trigger the rise of further protectionism.
In related news, four Republican senators joined with Democrats Wednesday to pass a resolution seeking to block Trump's 25% tariffs on Canada. The measure is not expected to pass the House, but offered a rare bipartisan rebuke of Trump's policies. The Republicans supporting the measure were Senators Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, Mitch McConnell, and Rand Paul. Canada and Mexico were spared in Trump's latest round of tariffs, but remain subject to a previously imposed 25% tariff on many imports. We'll have more on Trump's trade war after headlines with economics professor and author Richard Wolff. The Trump administration's abruptly fired the entire workforce at the low-income home energy assistance program, which helps more than 6 million people pay their home heating and cooling bills. The cuts came amidst a mass purge of some 10,000 workers at the Department of Health and Human Services Tuesday. Separately, leaders of the National Endowment for the Humanities say Elon Musk's Doge operation has recommended slashing NEH's workforce by up to 80%. The independent federal agency provides grants to museums, universities, teachers, libraries, public radio and TV stations, nonprofits, and more. Meanwhile, disability rights groups have sued the Trump administration and Elon Musk over Doge's cuts to the Social Security Administration, which they say disproportionately impacted their community, violating their constitutional rights. This week, the Social Security Administration opened an investigation into a series of website crashes that prevented beneficiaries from accessing their online accounts at the MySSA portal at least five times last month, with some beneficiaries receiving inaccurate notices that they would no longer receive supplemental security income. Elon Musk has called Social Security, quote, the biggest Ponzi scheme of all time, unquote, and has proposed slashing up to $700 billion from Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, and programs for the poor. Elon Musk is the world's richest man. On Wednesday, the White House dismissed reports that Elon Musk might soon leave his role in the Trump administration, saying his work with Doge will continue. A federal judge Wednesday dismissed New York Mayor Eric Adams' corruption case, granting a request from the Justice Department that was widely seen as a quid pro quo in exchange for Adams implementing Trump's mass deportation agenda. But U.S. Judge Dale Ho dismissed the case with prejudice, meaning the charges cannot be later revived, going against the wishes of the Justice Department, which sought to leave the door open for potential future prosecution. During a news conference Wednesday, Mayor Adams celebrated his legal victory by pitching a book written by new FBI director and prominent conspiracy theorist Kash Patel called Government Gangsters.
Jesus stepped in, and he uses who he uses. And New Yorkers stop me all the time in trying to find the rationale behind this. And I found it in this book. I'm going to encourage every New Yorker to read it. Read it and understand how we can never allow this to happen to another innocent American.
Mayor Eric Adams also announced he's leaving the Democratic Party and will seek re-election as New York mayor as an independent. A federal judge in California has ordered the Trump administration to temporarily restore legal aid to tens of thousands of vulnerable unaccompanied immigrant children. Plaintiffs who represent the children say Trump's halting of the legal assistance violated a 2008 anti-trafficking law. Meanwhile, members of the small New York community of Sackett's Harbor upstate are demanding the return of three children who were taken last week by ICE agents during a raid at a dairy farm. At least seven community members, including the children's mother, were arrested in that raid. We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast. Burma's ruling military junta has declared a temporary 20-day ceasefire as the death toll from last week's earthquake hit over 3,000 people. Armed resistance groups had previously also announced a temporary ceasefire. Rescue and relief efforts have been hampered by the recent slashing of U.S. foreign aid under President Trump. Many survivors in Mandalay, near the earthquake's epicenter, are in difficult-to-access areas and remain without homes, power, and phone service.
For now, we sleep on the ground with mattresses. Some people who still have mosquito nets set them up, while those who don't just sleep under the open sky.
At least 22 people died in Thailand, most of them killed in the collapse of a high-rise that was under construction when the earthquake struck. Authorities in Pakistan have given undocumented Afghan immigrants until next week to self-deport or face mass arrest as officials seek to deport 3 million Afghans this year. It's a crackdown that's been widely condemned by the United Nations and human rights groups. Tens of thousands of Afghans were forced to flee Pakistan after the Taliban takeover in 2021, including many prominent women's rights activists. Some 20,000 Afghans were approved for resettlement, and the United States remain in limbo after Trump paused U.S. refugee admissions. Mediators from the African Union have arrived in South Sudan for urgent talks amidst growing fears of a new civil war following the recent arrest of the first vice president, Riek Machar, which ended a fragile power-sharing agreement. The government of President Salva Kiir has accused Machar of attempting to ignite a new rebellion. Rights groups are urging South Sudan's rival leaders to immediately de-escalate amidst mounting insecurity. This is UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
Let's not mince words. What we are seeing is darkly reminiscent of the 2013 and 2016 civil wars, which killed 400,000 people. All the dark clouds of a perfect storm have descended upon the people of the world's newest country and one of the poorest.
President Trump's reportedly considering a deal that would avert a ban on TikTok by allowing the Chinese parent company ByteDance to keep control of the app's algorithm but lease it to a new U.S. spinoff entity. Lawmakers have claimed TikTok poses a national security concern, but critics of the ban say it's motivated by anti-Chinese bias and is a threat to free speech and some users' livelihoods. The pause on the ban expires Saturday. Amazon also made a late bid to buy TikTok, though some reports say it's been rejected by Trump officials. In Arizona, hundreds of community members gathered to mourn Emily Pike, a murdered 14-year-old indigenous girl, as she was laid to rest over the weekend on the San Carlos Apache Reservation, where she was from. Emily Pike was reported missing in January after running away from her group home. Her remains were found a few weeks later on Valentine's Day. Emily Pike's loved ones are demanding answers and justice for the indigenous teen. And Mario Joseph, a prominent Haitian human rights lawyer, has died in a car accident at the age of 62. Joseph was an attorney at the Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti, represented many political prisoners and other victims of human rights abuses. He led the prosecution in the trial of the 1994 Rabateau Massacre, which saw military and paramilitary forces attack and kill at least two dozen people who'd taken part in demonstrations supporting Jean-Bertrand Aristide, who'd been overthrown in a coup 3 years earlier. Democracy Now! Traveled to Haiti in 2010 following the devastating earthquake, where we spoke with Mario Joseph.
The way the earthquake hit, it didn't discriminate.
That's a
good example for us to look at in Haiti. And stop with this exclusionary system. It's true, a lot of poor people were touched by this. But even people with big houses or small houses, everybody's living in the street now. This is why we have to begin in the system of exclusion for everybody to participate in the country's life.
To see our interviews with Mario Joseph, as well as our coverage of Haiti over the years, go to democracynow.org. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Coming up, we speak to economics professor Richard Wolff about President Trump declaring a trade war on the world. Stay with us. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Global stock markets are tumbling after President Trump unveiled the biggest hike in global tariffs in modern U.S. history, including a 10% blanket tariff on all imported goods from about 185 countries. In addition, many U.S. trading partners, including the European Union, China, and Japan, will see even higher tariffs. China now faces a total 54% tariff. Trump announced the plan during a speech in the Rose Garden at the White House.
My fellow Americans, this is Liberation Day, waiting for a long time. April 2nd, 2025 will forever be remembered as the day American industry was reborn, the day America's destiny was reclaimed, and the day that we began to make America wealthy again. Going to make it wealthy, good and wealthy. For decades, our country has been looted, pillaged, raped, and plundered by nations near and far, both friend and foe alike. American steel workers, auto workers, farmers, and skilled craftsmen, we have a lot of them here with us today. They really suffered gravely. They watched in anguish as foreign leaders have stolen our jobs, foreign cheaters have ransacked our factories, and foreign scavengers have torn apart our once beautiful American dream.
The impact of Trump's tariffs are expected to be felt around the world. While Trump claims the tariffs will boost the U.S. economy, many economists fear it could lead to a recession or worse. Trump's trade war could also shift global alliances as countries seek new trading partners. China, Japan, South Korea have already announced plans to increase trading ties and coordinate their response to Trump's tariffs. We begin today's show with Richard Wolff, professor of economics emeritus, University of Massachusetts Amherst, visiting professor in the graduate program in international affairs at the New School. He's the founder of Democracy at Work and hosts a weekly national TV radio program called Economic Update, the author of a number of books, including most recently Understanding Capitalism and the Sickness is the System, When Capitalism Fails to Save Us from Pandemics or Itself. Professor Wolff, it's great to have you with us again. Well, start off by responding to, and were you surprised, shocked, or do you guess that, well, about 185 countries were going to have see increased or tariffs?
On the one hand, we knew something like this was coming. On the other hand, the sweep and the scope of it does make you stop. Mr. Trump is right. It is a changing moment in American history and world history. But I think his representation of what's going on is completely fantastical and has only to do with the self-promotion that he is engaged in most of the time. It was never foreigners who did it to us, this notion of the United States as a victim. We have been one of the greatest beneficiaries in the last 50 years of economic wealth, particularly for people at the top just like him. It has nothing to do with foreigners taking advantage of us. This attempt to make himself strong and powerful relative to others, to blame the foreigner, these are cheap shots that a real president wouldn't do. And there's the most important point. The American economy is in trouble. The American empire is in decline. We don't want to discuss it in this country. We engage in denial, and instead we are striking out at other people, a sad way of handling a decline. The British Empire declined before us, so did all the others. We are now at that point. We had a great 20th century. 21st century is different. You have to face those problems. That's not being done. What's being done is to say we have difficulties, but they're all somebody else's fault, and we're going to solve it by punishing them. I would like to point out, as you suggest quite rightly, Amy, that the rest of the world is not going to sit by. The United States does not have the power it had in the 20th century. It is not in the position it seems to imagine itself. When the Secretary of the Treasury added to Mr. Trump's comments that he warned the rest of the world not to retaliate, that would imply that if they do, there would be escalation. Yes, he said, there will be escalation. Well, nothing will guarantee more escalation than if they do nothing, because then it's an invitation to Mr. Trump to keep doing it as each of these efforts doesn't work.
Given how dramatic this was yesterday, is it possible he was deciding this to the very last second as they put this off? And explain exactly. You're a professor. Mm-hmm. You're a teacher. Most people don't even realize how tariffs work.
Okay. A tariff is a tax. It's just a particular tax that got that name. It used to be called import duty. All it means is when something comes into the United States that was produced outside and is brought in to be sold, it has to pay a tax, as literally as it crosses our border into our country. It is paid by the American company that brings it in, which may pass it on to the consumer, usually what happens, and the tax goes to Uncle Sam. It goes to Washington. Mr. Trump loved to suggest that tariffs were paid by the others, a little bit like Mexico would pay for the wall. Never happened. It's not going to happen here either. It's an American tax. And there's something remarkable that clues you in to how big a change this is, that the Republican Party, which has branded itself as the anti-tax party for a century, is now imposing the most massive tax imaginable. Why this big change? Because we have big, big problems, and this kind of slapping the rest of the world is an attempt to solve a little bit of them, but it is not going to work because we don't have the power to do it anymore.
I want to go to UAW President Sean Fain, who supports Trump's new tariffs, saying last week, "We applaud the Trump administration for stepping up to end the free trade disaster that's devastated working class communities for decades." Fain spoke Sunday on CBS's Face the Nation.
We've seen over 90,000 manufacturing facilities leave the United States. We've seen in the big three alone in the last 20 plus years, 65 plants have closed. Look, tariffs aren't the total solution. Tariffs are a tool in the toolbox to get these companies to do the right thing. And the intent behind it is to bring jobs back here and invest in the American workers. If they're going to bring jobs back here, you know, they need to be life-sustaining jobs where people can make a good wage, a living wage, have adequate health care, and have a retirement security and not have to work 7 days a week or multiple jobs just to scrape to get by paycheck to paycheck.
Well, while UAW President Sean Fain praised Trump's tariffs, he also said he had great concerns about President Trump's move to eliminate contracts for 700,000 federal workers, the firing of workers at the National Institute of Health and other agencies.
I was a bit disappointed. I like Sean Fain, many of us do. But this was disappointing to say, basically, I will support the president because he does something that might help my union, even though Sean Fain knows, as most economists do, that if you put a tax on the goods coming in, they will go up in price because we have to pay that tax now. And that will lead to domestic producers able to raise their prices because their competitors from abroad are stuck with this tax. So we expect a boost to inflation, which is going to hurt the working class of this country in a very serious way, especially if it builds on itself, which often happens when you do tariffs like this. And I want to remind everyone, including Sean Fain, that the auto workers also represent workers in places that need export markets, that produce in America and sell abroad. When those countries retaliate, as they likely will, we will lose export markets, and that will mean fewer jobs. And no one, let me stress, no one now knows whether the jobs lost from this trade war will be greater or smaller than any jobs that are gained. It is a big risk being taken by Mr. Trump, and if it doesn't go well, it'll be very bad for the American economy. It will produce the recession folks are worried about, because if the prices go up, people buy less, and that loses jobs. When you look at all of this, this is an incredibly risky effort to blame the world, punish the world, and then cross his fingers, which is what he's doing, hoping it comes out all right. Reminds me of the football metaphor. This is a Hail Mary pass. You throw it down the field. You hope it bounces into your team's hands. But that's all it is, a long shot. And it's a sign of how troubled the American economy now is.
If you can put this in the bigger picture, talk about the tax cuts and how they fit into the tariffs, the, what is it, something like $4 trillion in tax cuts and who benefits? And then talk about the other issues that President Trump keeps saying that they're not going to touch, even though what many call his co-president, Elon Musk, whether he steps back from being, you know, giving speeches or not, going after Social Security, issues like Medicaid.
Let me start with the tax issue. The biggest single thing that Trump did in his first presidency was the tax cut of December 2017. And when that tax cut was written into law, it had a sunset. It expires this year, 2025. If that expiration is allowed to happen, corporations and the rich, who were the big beneficiaries back then, will face a big tax cut. He doesn't want to do that because that's his base, that's his donor support. He doesn't want to have those taxes go back up. Well, then what is he going to have to do? If he keeps on spending and he doesn't let those taxes go back up, he's going to have to borrow trillions, as we have been doing. He doesn't want to be the president who keeps borrowing trillions, in part because the rest of the world is a major creditor of the United States, and they're not going to continue to do it the way they have. So he's in a jam. He has to do something. So his hope is to savage the expenditures in this country. Look what he's doing. Mr. Musk stands there with a chainsaw to give us the clear implication. I'm going to solve the problem on the backs of the working class. I'm firing them all. I don't care what the rest of the working class suffers. I'm going to fire all these people without notice, without plan. Calling this efficient is a silly joke. An efficient process takes time, takes experts. You're not doing that. You're just wholesale firing. Calling that efficiency is an attempt to fool people that shouldn't make any difference. Mr. Trump is now in a jam. He can't get out of this without in some way solving